once again to Crazy Comics and Stories. It's me, your charming and delightful old Uncle Rat Bastard. And at the other end of the series of tubes and wires we call the internets is Joe, Crazy Writer. How you doing today, Joe?
I don't care how many times you ask, I am not going to show you my notifications for the latest news and updates. No thanks. I'm not allowing it.
What?
Oh, I'm sorry. Have we started?
Yes.
Oh, sorry.
I'm confused.
Hello.
What are you talking about?
Every time I click on someplace on Facebook or someplace on the web, they want to know my information so they can tell me all about their wonderful updates and things like that. But all I want to know is, when's my box coming? I only care. I'm all about box day.
Well, I agree with that. Matter of fact, I'm filling out my box day form for this month, and it's a heavy month. But
really?
Oh yeah,
mine is like ultra light.
A lot of hard covers.
Let's do a comparison. Let's talk about some of the what are you looking at? Maybe sometimes when you mention things, I will go and buy them. But let's see what you're getting.
Now I have to go find my previews. Well, Joe, if you want me to go get my previews, entertain the people.
Did I tell it you or did I not tell you? By the time this podcast last week dropped, that Toys R Us would be going out of business. And sad to say, they've announced that they're liquidating. And really, I'm kind of more bummed out about it than I really thought. I mean, the first time I'd ever heard of Toys R Us was that ubiquitous banner across those Marvel comics. You know, this could be worth a Toys R Us giveaway, or could be worth $10,000. A contest to this day that nobody seems to know who won, because neither Marvel nor Toys R Us have records of actually anybody winning that. But for me, there was like three distinct phases of shopping at Toys R Us.
Sometimes I just think I should drink during the show.
1980s. Into the 90s. When I was a collector of toys. Since you're busy raving and ranting in the background, I figured I would just go into my ode to Toys R Us. Since, as we predicted, it's going out of business. We said that in the last podcast. By the time it dropped, they may be liquidating, and they are. Well, Corey, what's your first memory, if you have one, of Toys R Us?
I don't have a lot of memories of Toys R Us because I grew up, you know, outside a town of 350 people. So Toys R Us really isn't something that I dealt with until I moved here to Minnesota. But there was this toy store in Macomb, Illinois. And what it was on the top level, you know, the street level, it was really they just had a bunch of bikes. And there wasn't even a cash register in the top level. And you would go down into the basement. And in the basement, they had like these wooden islands, and they would stack the toys on them, and they just had them around, and it looked like they had been apartments at one point, or rooms or something, because you would go to this room, oh, these are the board games, and you go to this room, oh, these are the dolls, and you go to another room, and it would be this. But the thing that always drew me was toward the middle of the store, they had a magic stage. And it was really just kind of a counter, and they had all the, you know, you could buy magic stuff, and then behind it, they would have the expensive stuff on the wall. And they would have, all, you know, the stuff that you know, the cups and balls, the rings, but they'd also have the stuff from the TV commercials that they always had during wrestling. You know, the cards where, you know, tap the cards once, and they're all the ace of spades. Tap them again, they're all blank.
Oh, I remember that ad, yeah.
And they had all the magic stuff, and I was just transfixed by it until I was a teenager, and then it was all the games, because they had all the D&D stuff, and they had all the war games, and they had all that. And then I went to college in Macomb, because before that, we would just go there once or twice a year, you know, and we thought Mom was just showing us stuff, but what it was, she knew that we would wander off and get lost so she could buy our toys for Christmas. But I went there a couple times during college, and it was looking a little shabby and a little run down, and some of the toys had been on the shelf for quite a long time, but I was actually able to afford some of the more complicated war games and stuff, and that's where I would buy my war games when I was in college. And then I think about a year or two after I left college, they kind of went away. And I can't find any record of them at all online. So they must have went under like 87, 88. But there's no record of the store. And I thought at least somebody would be posting, oh, I remember the toy store in Macomb. When I came up here, Toys R Us, I went in a few times. But my son mostly wanted stuff. He didn't go deep into toys. So it was stuff that you could pick up at Target. And I don't even think you and I went there, because when we would go on your geeky toy hunts, we would always go to this movie store, this video store in the local mall. What was that?
That was KB Toys, probably.
No.
Suncoast.
That's it, Suncoast.
Had them too. See, the first toy store I remember was a place called Storkville, and if you go to, I think it's Lexington Plaza, and there's a restaurant called House of Wong, which was there at the time I was looking at toys. And you go to the very end, that was Storkville. And I would go in it, and what I always remember was just hanging around, waiting for my parents, looking at the matchboxes. And these were like the classic matchboxes in the 70s. You know, I'd wander into the store, I'd see the train set, but I always kept returning because, you know, I was big on Hot Wheel matchboxes. A lot of toys I bought as kids were at Kmart, because there was one right down the road, well, down the train tracks. So we'd walk the train tracks, and we'd get down there, we'd get ourselves an icy, we'd run around the store collecting icy points, because for every 50, you got a free one. The guard there was pretty cool, older guy, you know, he knew we weren't up to trouble. He'd just say, bring the cups up to me, and I'll cut the points out for you, because, you know, then he didn't have to run around and pick up the cups. even back then, people were pigs, they just dropped the cups, you know. And I remember things
what
like
a bunch of animals.
I know. It's things I remember, like buying record albums there and buying my first G.I. Joe there. And, you know, but matchboxes were a buck, and they still were a buck. My first recollection of Toys R Us was that banner across the comics that we talked about in the past. And nobody seems to know who won that $10,000 of the toy spree that they were promising.
They have researched that more than almost anything else, because they did find the two kids who won the appearance in Superman 2.
I was just, you know, I ran across that ad because I'm digging through some old books, you know, doing the eBay stuff. So that was kind of interesting. For me, I was telling the folks as you came storming back in, I had three phases of Toys R Us. The first one was in the 80s. Now, Toys R Us, the one I shopped at, opened up in 1990. I actually stopped there this week. I brought all the employees some donuts, kind of said my goodbyes. And
you all cried together, didn't you?
No, not really. The place was busy. I mean, good Lord, there's a lot of people.
Oh, yeah, because they were marking stuff down.
No, there were no markdowns at this one.
Oh, because I know all weekend people were, you know, showing the markdowns, and it's mostly the superhero toys, but it's like 50% off.
Well, some that were actually, the ones that were originally going to close are still marking now, but I haven't seen any markdowns up here or heard from any of the bottom dweller people, which I'll refer to in a little bit. But up here we had Children's Palace, and that was, I've talked about that before, just rows. It was like KB Toys to a 100th degree, just old toys, and they were just put up, and they had discounts on them. They had the newer stuff, and I picked up action figures galore. We talked about Mighty Crusaders. I didn't even know they had a superhero line. I picked those up. Ghostbusters, old Star Wars, that you know, because by the time the late 80s were rolling around, that was over with. New toy lines would pop up. I just remember just like 100 foot long. You start at the beginning, and you had to dig, because you never knew what you'd find in the back. That's how I found a run of the original Ghostbusters and found Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And this was back when I was collecting toys, much to my wife's, you know, chagrin, because when we got married, I'd go to the apartment, and then I'd set up my room in the apartment and basically pin these toys to the walls, and that would be kind of my toy room. and you know, I put the computer up and my comics and everything. When Toys R Us came to town, they opened up almost right next to Children's Palace, which was kind of a ballsy move. And I remember going into it, and it's like anytime you go into a new Target, it's just new. There's nothing there of interest for a toy collector because you're looking for like the old things or fun things. They just had all the new stuff. And eventually, when Children's Palace finally closed, you know, Toys R Us became a place not only for collecting, but when I had Hot Comics, it actually became a source of inventory. And other shops did the same, the so-called bottom dwellers. There was one place called Stand Up Comics. I don't know if you ever went there, Corey. It was like on a sixth floor of a building.
Nope.
In 280 University area. Kind of weird because you wouldn't think a comic shop would be there, but you walk in and it was usually just where they stockpiled their stuff. And what these people would do is they would, when they found out like a certain toy had hit the market, they'd say, okay, they get their network running and they'd all hit. These guys would hit the Targets on the north side. These guys would hit Targets on the south side and the Walmarts. These guys would hit over there. And so they always had the hot toys, and they always marked them really, really expensive. And I would do that, too, with Hot Comics. Matter of fact, I remember one of the first toy runs we went was when the first run of Toy Biz X-Men figures hit. And, you know, I went. I forget. There were three people with me. I remember Dan Wiesemeyer was with me. And we found the toys. We didn't strip mine them like the other guys would do. What we did is everybody, one guy, I took a set, another guy took a set, and I grabbed a set for the shop. So I ended up with a big cart full of, Dan got a set, and I forget who, there might have been somebody else just along with me. And when we got to the front cashier, the cashier scolded us for, you can't come in here and buy all these toys. And I'm like, well, why not? We're paying full retail for them. Yeah, but you just take them back to your shop and put them up. That won't have nothing to sell here. And I'm like, so? Why don't you mark them up? But I kept my mouth shut. And then, of course, Dan came through, and he had about as many toys as we did. And, oh, she was lovey-dovey. Man, she's just lovey. I was like, Dan, she was all over you, man. She was just – I just found it amazing that, you know, Dan gets the nice bat her eyes and put her chest out treatment, and I get chewed out for doing this. Since then, though, I would never buy toys like that again. See? And they went out of business. No, but the point being, there were X-Men toys. There was a Power Ranger toys that came through. And, you know, they knew they were hot toys. I don't know if you remember that first run of Power Ranger toys.
Oh, yes.
They had the 6-inch toys on the blister pack. And then they had the little triangles. And they had the Megazoids. And just amazing. And they limited you. Because I remember I'd go through and I'd hit, there were about five Toys R Us in town, and I'd go to each one, and they were usually like, you're limiting it to two. And then I'd walk up and I'd, you know, you'd be nice about it. You just, it's one thing people don't realize in retail. If you're nice, you got a better chance of getting what you want than if you're an asshole about it.
Exactly.
And I would talk to people like, you know, I'm trying to get this set for my kids, and it's a set of five. I know you're limiting to two. Is there any way I could, you know, and they look around. They say, yeah, go ahead and do it. And, I, you know, one set would go to Dana, the others would go to me. So, you know, my favorite Toys R Us memory, and this is phase three, is with I'm actually with my kids. Dana used to just play me because she knew when we went to Toys R Us, odds are good she would leave with a toy. Because, you know, naturally I'm going there and I'd pick up toys for myself and I'd pick up toys for the shop. So, you know. One little toy, and I'd always play it off, you know, it's like, because she always had a tendency of picking the expensive toys. I said, well, you can pick this one or that one. And inevitably, she picked the cheaper toy because it was cooler. But around the time when the first Scooby-Doo comic came, they had this huge, about 4 foot tall stuffed Scooby-Doo. He's sitting on his haunches. He's got the Scooby-Doo look on. And the thing was about as big as Dana. And, of course, you know, her eyes just bugged out because she really wanted it. Well, what we'd do, we'd come by, I'd fish it off the top row, set it down. She'd give it a big hug. And then she'd say goodbye to it, and we'd put it back up and go buy our toys. Well, about the time Scooby-Doo number one came out, I thought, you know, I could bring this in and make a display at Hot Comics with it because I still had the window out front. and you put the dog up, and you put the comic. And my original intention was to, like, auction that off. You know, for every Scooby-Doo you bought, you get a chance to put your name and a number in a drawing, and whoever I draw would win. I actually remember talking with a gent named Vince from DC when we were talking about Scooby-Doo, and I told him what I was going to do, and he was like, oh, that's a great idea. You know, just make an event out of it. And we did. We sold quite a few Scooby-Doo comics. So naturally, I had to go get this stuffed animal. So I came in with Dana. I pulled it down, and she gave it a big bear hug. And I looked at her and said, Dana, should we bring this thing home? Really? Her eyes wouldn't log. I said, yeah, bring it up with me. And, you know, as we're walking, she'd be, are we really bringing Scooby home? Yes, we are. Even at the cashier, as I'm paying for it. Are we really bringing Scooby home? Yeah. And my wife has memory of this because all of a sudden here comes Dana lugging this thing in that's almost as big as her. Well, look what we got. We got a Scooby. And she explained to me, or I explained to my wife what I was doing with it because she's like, what the hell are you buying this thing for? It was like $50 or something. And I explained what I was going to do. And she was watching Dana as she was playing with it. I said, you're never going to get that away from her. And I never did. I believe my niece has it because we gave it to her when she went through her Scooby-Doo phase. So it's always something to do. The last major event I think I did at Hot Comics was when Star Wars The Phantom Menace figures came out. Because if you recall, all the stores, like Target, Toys R Us, Walmart, were opening at midnight. So you could come in and get first chance to get these toys because we were nosebleeding for Phantom Menace. I mean, Hot Comics was always on a Star Wars kick. We were way ahead of the game. We had vintage Star Wars figures. When Dark Horse did the Star Wars comic, the first one with Dark Empire, we were like, this is going to be amazing. We ordered heavy, and when the first issues were going up $20, we still had them at cover price. When Lucas decided to release his original trilogy, I can't remember, was that the original one or when he redigitalized them?
Redigitalized.
We were like, that's brilliant. And, of course, Hollywood was like, oh, this is a dumb idea. You're taking a movie that's over a decade old and putting it out. And nope, he made another billion on it. And so Phantom Menace, we were nosebleeding for these toys. And we came in, and you got a nice certificate saying you were a part of this event. And we dug through the toys, and people were pretty cool. I mean, I think I left with a complete set. Everybody got it. We made sure everybody got a complete set. Not just us, but people that were there with us. There were probably a good 50 people in line, and they had, when we left, they had enough toys still that so next morning they opened, they would be able to take care of it. And, you know, we're picking up the toys. We had no idea who the hell Jar Jar Binks was. Oh, I'm telling you, sometimes when you just don't know ahead of time, it's the golden age, isn't it?
By the way, Joe, does Joe know? You ready?
Hang on. Okay, I got the money ready.
Okay. Dark Empire was not originally made for Dark Horse. What comic publishing arm was going to publish Dark Empire?
I would guess Marvel.
Close.
But that's the only thing I could think of because they had the license to begin with.
You are close.
Uh-oh.
It was going to come out through Epic and was announced in their 1992 retailer summit.
Interesting.
As being an Epic miniseries. And the reason was because Marvel did not think that it would do that well. And Epic was, they could have it on more expensive paper with more expensive covers and make a profit on it. Whereas they thought if they put it out on newsstands, you know, as a regular comic, that it would flop. But then Dark Horse got the license for Star Wars, published that, and I think that was around the same time as the Thrawn trilogy came out in book form as hardcovers. And those two things are kind of what reignited Star Wars. And that's where the Star Wars Extended Universe came from.
Sadly, the last part of Toys R Us, you know, since Crazy Comics and that, I haven't really been buying a lot of toys. You know, I go through it maybe once, twice a month, just kind of looking around. I tend to pick up things for the charity booth because, you know, that's coming up May 19th and 20th at the MSP Comic-Con 2018. My girls and I are already pricing out stuff, getting ready for the charity booth. And if you're interested in donating, get a hold of us with all that information at the end of the con, or contact me direct at crazycomics@gmail.com. Any con information, go to mcbacomiccons.com.
Have they announced any big guests?
I don't know. I haven't actually looked at their website. I figure after this here podcast, I might go ahead, take a look and see what's up. So a lot of action going on.
The listeners have to wait a week.
Well, if the listeners are smart, they've already gone to mcbacomiccons.com and checked it out. Just like when we used to do the con, we'd tell people ahead of time, hey, look to see who's coming and plan accordingly. And while this is nowhere near the scope of some of the big major cons, there are still quite a few people there. I mean, it's big enough where I have people like, yeah, I went to the con, I didn't see you. And it's like, I must have gone and get gas. That was what I always did when I was going to Toys R Us. When I got to get gas, I ran up to Toys R Us and was always looking for things. Because back then, that was when you get a toy line come out, and if you could find the female figure, you had something in the bank that you could actually sell. And even to this day, I was looking at the Black Panther line. It was a Target. They just put out a new run, and there's only one female figure. It's not going for anything because eBay's kind of become the great equalizer. You can't buy a figure anymore and pump it up to $20 because you're the only one in town that has it. Odds are good somebody on eBay or Amazon has it for less. So,
and the people who used to do that no longer exist.
They're still around. There's one of the guys I know just passed away last year. And, it got to a point where I never had an in at Toys R Us. I had an in at some other stores where the guys would call me and say, hey, we just got the box X-Men figures. You want to dig through it? I do remember one guy, and I think his name's Tony at the Toys R Us in Maplewood that I went to. He used to, I'd be coming in and I'd be digging through the wrestling figures, and he'd say, hey, you looking for the wrestling figures? I said, yeah. Anyone in particular? I said, no, just anything new. And he'd bring out a box and let me, I'd basically have like maybe a $10 sale. And by the time he was finished, I'd probably leave with like $200 worth of wrestling figures. So, back then when they actually had somebody doing it, I mentioned him because when I went to Toys R Us to say my goodbyes, I was, I'll probably be back once they start liquidating stuff. But I was talking with him and I said, when did this store open? Because, my memory's fuzzy. To me, I was like buying stuff from in the 80s. I said, no, I was buying Children's Palace. The Toys R Us didn't move into the Minneapolis area until the 1990. So you're talking that shop's been there 28 years out of the, 40 years that Toys R Us has been in existence? So who knows? Maybe a hedge fund will buy this here Solitaire Rose Productions and take all the money out of it and load us up with debt, and then we'll go out of business. It could happen.
How much do I get?
Well, it depends if you're one of the owners that sells the store originally.
No. If I were to sell the podcast, how much do I get?
Well, it depends.
Okay, we'll talk more about that at the end of the show.
If you're the hot hedge fund guys, what they'll do is they'll buy Solitaire Rose Production with borrowed money because they can deduct the interest. So for them, it's actually free money. And then they will pay themselves back by loading up Solitaire Rose Production with crippling debt, and then the money goes to them for consulting and other types of bullshit firms, just like Ron Perlman did, with Marvel. And then when it comes time and Solitaire Rose Production can no longer get out of debt and do anything, they'll just declare bankruptcy and probably liquidate. Although I did read online somewhere that apparently whoever owns the rights to KB Toys is now accelerating their plans to come back to a retail environment, including online. So that should be interesting to see what happens with that. So no more Toys R Us. One less place to go get gas.
You told me to go get my previews, and you pretty much ate up all our time, didn't you?
I did. Doing it for two reasons. Because first of all, as I alluded to earlier, this was really a light previews for me. I compared to last month where I was just buried with choices. I didn't have a lot of choices this particular preview. I mean, there were a couple things I didn't go for. Did not go for the Final Crisis Omnibus. But I did go with a couple other things. If you want, I could start out, or maybe you want to start out.
Well, I could start out. Let's see here. Let me filter. I believe that I have a filter, doesn't it? Let's see. The Creepy Archives has... they've started printing the Creepy Archives again. Volume 26. I'm excited about that, even though, boy, this is where... Boy, once you got to 79 and 80, once Louise Jones left Warren to go over to Marvel, the Warren magazines got under the editorial thumb of Bill Dubay. And while there was some brilliant art by Alex Nino and others, boy, Bill Dubay couldn't write his way out of a paper bag. And they're getting to the point. It wasn't so much in Creepy and Eerie from what I hear, but I did pick up the magazine 1984, which then became 1994, which pretty much every issue was how much sex and violence can we shove in this magazine? Whee! You've got the Hellboy Omnibus and the Conan Omnibus.
I got that. I didn't do that one because I decided I was going to go with the how do you say it? Shaolin Cowboy.
Oh, okay, yeah.
They had those two. They're reoffering the one book that has the original run, and then the other run that Dark Horse had.
But if you're going to get these Conan omnibuses, which reprint the Dark Horse Conan stuff, you're probably going to want to load up on them soon, because basically, yeah, the rest are going over to Marvel.
Yep. So just like you had a chance to get your Star Wars stuff before Marvel swallowed them up.
Yep. So during the last few months, what Dark Horse did was rather than putting out new Star Wars comics, they just bundled up their stuff and sold it in omnibuses so they could meet the you need to publish one thing a month and also use up their inventory and squeeze one last dollar out of that stuff. And that's what they're doing with Conan. They're squeezing their last dollars out of it. And then when it goes to Marvel, Marvel will probably take a while to reprint that. But once the rights go, and this is kind of what happened with the Star Wars stuff, the minute the rights go over to Marvel, Dark Horse, whatever they have in their warehouse, they can't sell. Which is why those Star Wars omnibus editions kind of showed up everywhere really, really cheap. Because they had to liquidate them. And they were liquidating them a few weeks before the first of the year. Kind of like, remember our first rush to get a cheap omnibus, Joe? The John Carter Warlord of Mars omnibus? Mm-hmm. Because Marvel lost the rights, so it's like, we got to get rid of them. So they were, by the end, they were selling them to comic shops. This is a $125 omnibus. They're selling them to comic shops for $7 and $8. Because it's like, yeah, we got to get them out of the warehouse. We cannot sell them after this date.
Or you can just say screw it and go get the Dork hardcover that Evan Dorkin and Sarah Dreyer.
That's another one I'm getting.
Because I definitely love Evan Dorkin's strips, and this stuff, of course, is from his run on Dork, and as well as I think the House of Fun special. Yep. And other good things. And so for the price, for $20, that's actually a pretty good deal.
And what it was, Dork and House of Fun were just kind of collections of odd stuff. You know, stuff that didn't fit anywhere else, short stories or, you know, single-page gags or things like that. Let's see. Batman Rebirth Deluxe Collection. I'm buying those hardcovers because they reprint about 20 comics worth. It's one of the things, the bi-weekly Rebirth stuff, they're putting them out in these really nice hardcovers about every 9-10 months. And then the Final Crisis 10th Anniversary Omnibus. Man, that's an expensive one, too.
Yeah, I decided to pass on it. But if you go to Lion Forge on page 386, I went with The Big Empty Life of Alphonse Tabaret. It's an existential fairy tale about life, love, loss, and the search for answers to questions we all ask nobody in particular. and they give an actual page of the book with it across from it. And I read through it and I thought, you know, that's actually kind of interesting. I am not even going to try to attempt to say who it's written by or what the art and cover story is, but it's coming in May. And like I said, on page 386, 387 in your previews, that's where you'll find it. So I'm actually looking forward to that. And that actually was, those were the three things other than the Shallow and Cowboy books that I bought. I did, everything else was either graphic novels, or I'm sorry, just regular comic books, or I did on in the toys. I actually bought a toy, since we're talking the end of Toys R Us. And can you guess which one it was, Corey?
I haven't even looked at the toys.
Oh, I love looking through the toys.
Oh, wait, I'm buying
a t-shirt. Me too. What are you getting?
I got to get the new Mage t-shirt.
I have to as well, because my old ones wore out.
Yes.
And I figure one of these days I am going to go back to the Renaissance Festival, because I have not been to the Renaissance Festival in ages. And I'll just wear the Mage t-shirt like I did the first time, you know, dark pants, boots, and just have a glow-in-the-dark wiffle ball bat. And that'll be my costume.
There you go.
So, and actually one guy recognized me. He kind of broke character. Say, is that Mage? Yes. No, I am getting for my beloved
wife. Yeah, you've lost enough hair, too.
I know, and I just got to grow. I can do the beard and goatee real quick. I'm getting my wife, and I don't know where the hell it is, but it's the Good Feathers figurines that it runs around $20-$30, and I'm just going to sneak it into her office someday and just set it on her desk.
So you're not buying the Earth X trilogy omnibus?
Nope. I already have them in paperback. No sense getting them again.
I am buying the omnibus of those because I remember you had the first Earth X book, the big...
That big one with a CD and a plastic case. And
yep. Yeah. And you had that forever, and I always kept looking at it going,
I had a couple of those. I had one in mint shape, and I also had one that was kind of beat up that I think I picked off the liquidation market.
And I always wanted to read it. But now that it's coming out in an omnibus, it's like, oh, okay, I'll read it. And by the way, you and I have heat.
I'm not getting the Vampirilla Tarot cards.
No, no,
I had a couple, and I sold them already.
You got heat because you contradicted me on the Facebooks.
Always I contradict you.
Because we have been talking about the Marvel character One Above All.
Yep.
And the first appearance of One Above All was in the Eternals number 7 by Jack Kirby.
That was the Celestial One Above All. There is a secondary character that's not the Celestial, according to Marvel Wikipedia, that is the One Above All. And according to them... I'm not quite sure if its first appearance was in Fantastic Four or in Sensational Spider-Man. He pops up whenever he wants.
So they're the One Above All, there's two of them.
Apparently, unless you want to say that Celestial is the actual One Above All, because we really don't know much about the Celestials. We might be finding out because that new run of Avengers is starting this month.
That will have the last Celestial.
Yeah, so we're going to have, there'll be something in there as well.
But I mention that because the Celestials play a huge part in the Earth X trilogy, don't they?
Yeah. You know, that's one of those, it's been so long since I've read them that I may have to pull them off the shelf and reread them.
I read them.
Because it was a fun read.
I read them when they were... because I picked them up at the library. At the library. And read them.
The library is where you find what it's all about.
And it was back when Alex Ross would co-plot with this... I don't remember the guy's last name. Jim something. No, it's not in previews. That's right. Because Marvel's off on their own. And I don't have that because you had to order it separately.
Oh, I got mine right here.
Yeah, but normally... you would order the previews, and it would have the Image Plus and the Marvel thing. And then, you have to order the Marvel thing separately.
Well, that's because they came separately. If you remember when I had Hot Comics and Crazy Comics, those little books would come separate, and I would have to put them together.
Yeah, but
so
you used
them,
to just order
by
it.
By them not doing that and making it so you order it, even though it's free, that cuts down a step for them. So for manpower idea, that actually makes sense.
I suppose. So who you was know. The co-writer on Earth X? Because I know he co-wrote a few things with Alex Ross, including a lot
Earth
of
X.
Project Superhero Jim, stuff.
Jim Krugler?
Okay.
And Alex Ross. And then pencilers by everybody.
I believe Chris Cross did a lot of penciling on that.
His name's not on here.
Oh, he must have done the later one then.
Now, this is the Alpha hardcover. Does that mean there's something else coming,
yes,
or is this everything?
There will be a second one, because this only goes up through, like, there's Earth X, and then Universe X, and then Paradise X, right?
Oh, Paradise X, that's what's not in this one. And that was a big series.
But
I got to check. I wonder if I got Paradise X.
It's one of those where I remember when I read it, it's like, wow, Alex Ross is like Roy Thomas when it comes to this stuff. He brought in all this continuity from the past and, you know, really was one of the few people who used Kirby's Eternals really well. And, yeah.
And he actually had Rom in it, too, but he couldn't call him Rom.
Right. But that was a fun series. And it's, you know, this is Marvel's future.
I lied to you, Corey.
You did?
I did. There is one more graphic novel that I ordered.
The Fantastic Four Omnibus Volume 1 by Jack Kirby and Stan Lee?
No, but it has to do with a Marvel comic artist, Scott Koblish.
Oh, and the many deaths of Scott Koblish?
Yeah. Page 330 from Chronicle Books. Scott Koblish has been illustrating his own demise for many years in a morbidly funny four-panel black-and-white comic. And I ordered it. So I did have one more coming, which is nice.
So, yep, there's a lot of stuff coming out, man. A lot of stuff coming out. Let's see. And I think Marvel may have to do a one above all versus one above all, because there really can only be one above all.
Oh, it's probably the same guy.
There can't
Never. Oh, yeah. Just like it can be two Superman or two Spider-Man or two Wolverine or two Hellboys. Well, okay, maybe not the last one, but Spider-Man. Sad news. We already had enough sad news with Toys R Us going away.
The Miles Morales Spider-Man book has been canceled. The last issue by Bendis is the last issue that they will be doing where he is called Spider-Man. Sad.
By the way,
if they go with the name that they've been toying with in the comic, I may not be able to buy it.
In case you're wondering, there are four Corey Strodes on Facebook, so we've got some work to do here.
There is a Corey Strode registered with the Writers Guild, and he wrote the movie Tooth Fairy, which was a low-budget horror movie. And I've only read one review of it, and the person said that the writer obviously chose a fake name based on the Halloween character of Laurie Strode. Now, Joe, you've seen Halloween, right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Who was Laurie Strode's brother?
No, I couldn't tell you. That's one of those movies I like saw when it came out, and I haven't seen it since.
Well, remember why Michael Myers was after her.
Hot date?
No. He was her brother.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So what's the name of my son?
Shannon?
Michael.
Does he know that?
No, but I snuck it past his mom.
Are you rat bastard?
Well, she vetoed the first name. First name was going to be, first name would be Bruce and middle name would be Wayne. Now, when I told my son that, he actually asked, would it be okay if I
change my name? And I said, I would have no problem with it. But she vetoed that, so I said, how about Michael? Oh, listen, it's the Halloween music. Cool. Yes, I may be a goody two-shoes, but there's still a little bit of Uncle Rap Bastard left in me.
Very true.
So what have you been doing? I saw you posting up on the Facebook some books you've been reading.
Let's see. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 of them.
Oh!
Yeah, I lucked out because of some weird reasoning. I was
weird
put
reasoning.
In the
That should
slow...
be the name of this podcast, Weird Reasoning.
See, we're giving away ideas to people. I'm telling you.
I just gave away a huge summer crossover to Marvel right there. There can only be one above all.
But they also... see, and that was something, too, when we were talking about who's the most powerful Marvel character, because we were trying to figure out how to get DC and Marvel to go after each other. I can't envision why one above all would want to, like, destroy the DC universe. But,
Because anyways. after Secret Wars, one of the universes got messed up.
Yeah, but they've already been together once. Maybe he just doesn't want to. He doesn't want to see another amalgamation again.
Well, wasn't there a reason?
No, there we have a plot. There we have a motivation.
Wasn't the two brothers their whole reason to exist to keep the two universes apart?
No, that was Axis's reason to apart. The brothers were just not aware of each other. When they became aware of each other, that's what caused the universes to come together. Right now, over me, over you. So you want me just to start at the top?
Sure.
Or what I could do is I could do half now and half when I get to geeking.
It doesn't matter to me. I didn't get to read a lot, and I'll be talking about my reading and geeking, except for one book I was reading. Because I've told you about there's that book bub, which you can get a free book or two or three every day if you sign up for their mailing list. You get all these, it's like, oh, here are all these e-books that are on sale today, and at least one or two of them are free. And I started reading one, and I'm not going to mention the name of it because, you know, what I'm about to say is kind of mean. But it starts as a crime novel about an amoral lawyer. And then they have, like, interspersed stories about this caveman who becomes a god. And then at the halfway point in the book, we find out that the caveman who became a god is possessing the amoral lawyer. And at that point, I hit the delete button because it's like, no, you don't throw gods into a crime novel just because you've written yourself into a brick wall. It's okay to mix genres, but it's not okay to go, this character has no redeeming qualities, and I've got him to the point where he's pretty much, there's nothing left for him to do. Oh, he's possessed by an evil god. Doesn't really fit when what he's doing is political assassinations, but, you know, whatever.
Whatever.
They ain't all gems. That's why some of them are free. So what did you read? I only saw pictures of two of your trade paperbacks.
Yeah, and I'm going to say that for geeking because that was the fun part. Some of these are books that I've mentioned that I picked up while I was running around. The first one you're going to have a tough time finding because I believe it was a Kickstarter, and it didn't come with what's that goofy ISBN number? It's called Ashes. It was by Mario Calandaria and Carl Siminski. And the storyline basically is a New York firefighter, Mark Tilliger, suffers an injury on the job. He struggles to overcome new obstacles thrown in his way and as he goes to rebuild his life. A pretty good book. There was a – it's in black and white. The art, as I love, is very recognizable. Again, my grandfather and my father were firefighters, so I kind of predisposed to these type of stories. Someday I'll go into my rendition of Emergency, you know, and how that was the greatest show on earth, except for my dad complaining bitterly about Randy Mantoux's haircut. There ain't no way they'd ever had let a guy like that on the fire department.
By the way, does Joe know who the creator of that show was?
No, I don't.
Jack Webb.
Oh, Mr. Webb.
Yep, very, from very Dragnet nice. And Adam 12.
Excuse me a second. Because this was a Kickstarter book, it's tough to find. I didn't see it on the eBays. I have no idea if you could go buy it from him direct. Self-publishing, calendaria.mario@gmail.com, 2012. Not a bad book. The only real thing, there was conflict between the son and the father. I don't think it meshed very well because it kind of came out of the blue. What he was trying to go for was the fact that the father was his whole family was a big name on the fire department. So the father was pulling strings behind the scenes to get his son, even though he was injured to the point where he couldn't do the firefighting job, into the department somehow. And I don't think the son appreciated that, but it was an interesting read. I read Best Wishes from Mike Richardson and Paul Chadwick. When two strangers cast coins into a Central Park fountain, their dreams and desires become miraculously intertwined. Carol wants fame and respect. Mary craves true love from her pro quarterback boyfriend. But destiny weaves a tangled fabric. Sometimes your dreams come true. Sometimes you're up doing a podcast for 8 years. First of all, Paul Chadwick's art, awesome. Way awesome. And the story was by Mike Richardson with script and lettering by Paul Chadwick. This was a really compelling book, and I ended up reading it over the course of a couple hours, which most of the time you get a graphic novel like this and you blow through it so fast, you're like, why did I pay money for this thing? But you ordered this too, didn't you, Corey?
Yes, I did. I haven't had a chance to read it yet.
And I ain't going to say nothing else about it, although I enjoyed it thoroughly, and it's definitely worth picking up. Let's see. I reread Love and Capes by Thomas Zahler. He's got 4 books out. Love and Capes is basically a superhero love story and Mark Wade writes in his introduction, I hate Zahler because he makes it look so effortlessly that everything he writes is just it's so good that he just absolutely loved it. And he has 4 books out. It starts from like the beginning to the courtship, to the marriage, to they have a kid. And there's more. I swear that he does it in 4 panel grids because he posts it online. And he does more characterization in those 4 panels than DC Comics or Marvel does in like an entire crossover event. Why they haven't hired this guy to do, hey, you know what? You're going to do a Life of Clark Kent comic. And because the one thing he does is he originally was doing it like a sitcom. And he said that the heroics is always off screen for the most part. And it just works. If you've never read Love and Capes, go pick yourself up one of the books. Maybe your comic shop might have one of the free comic book day things lying around, but I highly recommend it because it was just fantastic. A couple other big graphic novels that I waded through. I read Avengers Academy, The Complete Collection, Volume 1. First time reading this, with the exception of like when they crossed over into, I think they crossed over into, was it? No, this is after Civil War. There's a couple crossovers coming up. I think Marvel versus X-Men. And so I picked up those crossovers. But this is just a delightful book. And I think these characters are still about, if I recall right. I think I saw a few of them running around in the background in the current Avengers. But you know, stories like this and the Spider-Man X-Men where they're actually dealing with the up-and-coming heroes. It's just a lot of fun. A lot of continuity in there. It kind of pops in. So for long-term readers, it's rewarding, but it doesn't bog you down if you're not a long-time reader. About the only thing that was really jarring in the book was they stuck in Avengers Academy Giant Size number 1, where I believe the kids went and fought Arcade, the Murder World guy.
Yeah.
And the problem was, is there was a character in there that hadn't been introduced in the main storyline yet. And there were other characters that weren't in the storyline. And so I'm kind of like, okay, this is not really, this doesn't really mean to be part of the story at this particular point. It was a good story, but it was just kind of jarring. And I'm looking forward to seeing the rest of the run. This one goes up through, let's see, 12. And I'd included the Thunderbolts crossover, which was cool. And I think Enter the Heroic Age, which was like the one, the point one story that goes into it.
Oh, it was a one shot because there was a big Heroic Age book that they put out that kind of had, you know, here's some pages of this, here's some pages of this, kind of teasers of all the new books they were doing.
Yeah. I bought and read through Aquaman, Peter David, book one, which again, I read this when it first came out. When the hell did Peter David do Aquaman?
Oh, it was in a while ago. Because remember, yeah. Everybody got mad that Peter David had piranhas eat his hand.
Yeah. And it was a wonderful read. I mean, it's just a lot. The art is 90-ish art, but it didn't. The story overcame it. Here you have an Aquaman that likes to be the Aquaman. You get a feel that there's more going on under the sea than just what Aquaman's going through. And you get the feeling that, yes, he is kind of a deposed king at the moment. And I haven't seen book two be solicited, but I'll definitely be picking this up as it goes on because it's just a fun series. It has a good prologue from Peter David. And the big thing, of course, is that, he's taking a character that nobody really cared about and made people care about. And, you know, he even talks about it where he's like, you're doing Aquaman. Yeah, but I got great plans. Yeah.
But what? It's Aquaman.
Well, Mira's coming back. That's nice. And he's getting involved with Dolphin. Sounds interesting. Checks his watch. And we're going to have his hand get eaten off by piranhas and replaced with a harpoon. What? Holy crap. I got to read that. It starts out with Aquaman Time and Time, the miniseries, which, you know, again, a lot of these books don't really have much of a value. But just to pick them up in a book form and be able to keep them is a lot of fun. And plus, I also love his characterizations as sharks. It is a nice hole, isn't it? The last book I'm going to blab about came out of The Treasury of British Comics. From Liverpool into legend, the Beatles, as you've never seen them before. And this was actually originally published in The Beatles Story, which was a... where did it come out?
Wasn't that from Revolution Comics, the people who did Rock and Roll Comics?
No. This was originally published in Britain.
Oh, okay.
And I'm trying to find the where it came out. Let's see. Maybe it was at the back here. Here it is. In the afterword. Basically, there was a book called magazine Look In was the name of the magazine that the Beatles story ran in. Came out in the 80s. And so it was very detailed in terms of stuff from the beginning of the Beatles' career. And when you get to the final pages, it just kind of, they did Abbey Road. There was no mention of Let It Be, the Yellow Submarine. They just kind of come together. So the first part of their career where it was well-documented came out. And now here we are, you know, years later. We know much, much more about what happened in the Beatles' final years. Well, when this came out in the 80s, they didn't actually know a lot of that. So it's real heavily tilted toward the early Beatle years. The art is gorgeous. And like I said, it was originally published in Look In magazine in the 80s. And unless you lucked out and were in Britain at the time, you probably wouldn't get a chance to do it. Oversized hardcover. Rebellion is the name of the group and the publisher. And it's just part of their British Comics. I think the last one they did was Hookjaw, if I don't remember. I raved about that one a number of months ago.
Hookjaw was with Titan Books.
Too Hot for British. comics. They had to edit the blood out of it.
By the way, I have read up on Revolutionary Comics, who did Rock and Roll Comics. There was a trade paperback of the Beatles Experience miniseries they did from Blue Water Publications, which are Blue Water's really well known for not paying their creators.
Sounds about right. Beatles Experience. Let's see.
Came out in February of 2010.
Kind of look kind of pricey. Probably just because, you know, like you said, they were bootlegs and 8 issues involved in the lowest one. They're all running for about $5 a piece. I don't see the graphic novel, but I'll keep buzzing through it.
I have an ISBN number. So at least it was they went out and they bought an ISBN number. But someday we should talk about Revolutionary Comics because Schindler's made a lot of money off them.
Oh, I carried a lot of them too. Just because you could make a little section with rock and roll music. And
yep.
And I think with the exception of New Kids on the Block, for the most point, they were pretty much ignored because they were kind of like a buttocks on the – there were so many unauthorized things coming out.
Oh, there was a lot of lawsuits. I'm reading up on it here, and there were a lot of lawsuits going on here.
Oh, I just remember
when they did the unauthorized sports biography comics.
Oh, what? Oh, yeah, those guys tend to notice a little bit more. Just ask Todd McFarlane.
Yeah,
I'm gonna save the rest of my fun stuff for Freakin'.
Well, that's good because you know who hasn't been reading comics because they're too busy helping their customers.
Oh, you mean Ringo Starr, because he just received a knighthood, so now it's Sir Richard Starkey.
No, Ringo Starr's too busy to answer fan mail anymore, because remember he did that video a few years ago where, you know, he said, no more fan mail to any address you may have. Anything you send will be thrown away with peace and love. Peace and love. Don't send me any more mail. I'm too busy.
The guy doesn't like peas, huh? Come on, Ringo. Just give peas a chance.
I still remember back in the 80s when he was on Saturday Night Live. And they did this skit about how, you know, basically he was crashing with a fan and spent all his time popping the bubble wrap. Just playing with bubble wrap all day. Because, you know, let's face it, Ringo didn't have much of a career in the 80s. Not until he figured out, hey, I gather together all my friends and we go to state fairs. And we'll call it an all-star band.
But it should have been a sequel to Caveman.
But no. The people who are too busy to read your comics are these guys, our sponsors.
That's right. Here at the Solitaire Rose Radio Network, we have ads. And our first sponsor is me. That's right. Your charming and delightful old Uncle Rat Bastard. I have my first book out with Dangerous Dan Moore. It's the first 100 strips of our online web strip, Worldwide News, the story of the lowest-rated cable news network. And you can get yourself a copy with commentary, with all sorts of extras, with signatures and everything. Just email Dan over at lordshadowflame@gmail.com. Our top sponsor, who's been with us since day one, is DreamHost. DreamHost.com. You need yourself a website, and DreamHost.com is the number one web host in the whole known universe. Just head over to DreamHost.com, put in the code CRAZY, K-R-A-Y-Z, get $20 off your first year. How can you beat that? Our other sponsor is Graze, G-R-A-Z-E.com. Healthy snacks for a healthy lifestyle. Just head over to Graze, put in the code CORYS3R5P. Your first and fifth box are free. You can get them weekly. You can get them bi-weekly. You can get them monthly. You just order a whole bunch of them. It's great stuff to keep you away from the vending machine at work. Now, if you would like to leave a comment for any of the podcasts that we do, we'd love those. Go ahead and email us at solitairerosenetwork@gmail.com, or you can call 952-856-0519. Operators are standing by. Okay, it's just a place that we'll record your calls, but we'll play them on the air. We'll answer your questions. We love getting feedback. Tell us what you think. Ask a question. Suggest a topic. Be a guest. Send us your stuff. solitairerosenetwork@gmail.com. If you would like to advertise on any of the Solitaire Rose radio shows, you can. Just email us at solitairerosenetwork@gmail.com, subject advertising. Thanks.
What a nice bunch of guys.
And I'm too busy to read your comics because I have my own. And Solitaire Rose Radio is doing all these podcasts. Just listen.
The Solitaire Rose Radio Network has all sorts of podcasts. We've got Scrabbling Across the West with Dave Cafell and his lovely bride, Stephanie. They travel across the country playing musical gigs. And at night, they sit down to play Scrabble and talk about their day at scrabbling.solitairerose.com. There's Novelcast over at novels.solitairerose.com, where I take the novels that I've written and turn them into audio podcasts. Currently, we are doing a novel called Do the Job, which is a murder mystery set in the world of 1980s professional wrestling. Then over at badadvice.solitairerose.com, me, Corey Strode, and Wolfie B. Bad, along with Dan Moore, give bad advice to people who send in questions. That's bad advice over at badadvice.solitairerose.com. The Solitaire Rose Radio Network is growing. Be there! You think NBC will get mad I used that?
And now, after we've done all the plugs, we get to Joe's favorite part of the show, where Corey talks about the huge-breasted woman at work. Now,
yes,
it's when Joe talks about what's going on the eBays. Joe?
I actually reconnected with an old customer of mine. He ended up, his name's Jamie. He's up in Ely. He used to be one of the guys who traveled down to Hot Comics. And he ended up buying a very cherry copy of World's Finest number 300 from me, one from my personal collection. And I noticed it was him because as I'm looking at the address, I saw Ely. I said, oh, cool. And it just happened to be him. So I sent him a little note and he replied I can't believe that fate delivered not only this amazingly beautiful copy of World's Finest 300, but when I saw who it was from, I couldn't believe it. It was nice to kind of run into you again. I want to say thanks for everything. Just like back in the day, you delivered the goods.
They really like you.
Yeah, they tolerate me as long as I got something you want to buy on the eBays. So, but it was fun to actually reconnect with somebody like that. There are many times I stop and think about my old customers from Hot Comics and Crazy Comics. And, you know, some of them I luck out and I'll see it at Comic-Con, or the MSP Comic-Con, that is. There's a few I'll run into at the Source. So it's always fun. You guys know where I'm going to be, so I will be probably at the charity booth unless I'm out wandering, because you know I love wandering at cons. So if you get a chance, come by, say hi. Maybe if you got a message or pie you want me to give to Corey, I'll make sure he gets it. Anyways.
Wait, people give you pie to give to me, and I never get it.
Well, if you show up at a con once or twice, but or better yet, you could just go to my eBays at Crazy, K-R-A-Y-Z. And if you would have, this afternoon I was putting on copies of Shazam. And the first one to sell was number 25, which is a Captain Marvel meets Isis. Oh, mighty Isis. And these were very good shape ones. I haven't gotten to the mint shape ones yet. So a lot of those books in mint shape have really gone up in price like crazy. A few other sets. I sold an Archie meets Kiss set. I sold my last run of Amazing Spider-Man one more time because I had all the variant covers and I just put them together. And there's a couple more. Fat Freddy's Comic and Story number 2 from 1983. We've talked about the fabulous furry Freak Brothers before, and they gave Fat Freddy his own comic for a while. So I don't know if I have it reprinted, but I'm like, you know, as I'm slowly whittling my comics down, that was one of them that went. And I sold. Let's see. Let's ask the Strode.
Hey, you're turning the tables. That's not fair.
I know. Well, I'm down 30 cents. I got to get caught up. Okay, Corey. 1972, Joe Kubert during the art. It's the third issue of DC's Tarzan. What number is it?
Third issue?
Yes.
254?
Oh, way off. Way off. Tremendously off. No, sorry. 209.
Oh, okay.
And the reason I know that is because I sold my very fine copy just recently. And I got all excited because it sold to a gent who had a very famous name, but obviously it wasn't the famous name person, so I didn't bother about it.
Oh, who knows? It was Chris Farley.
Sure, why not? But that Inglorious Bastard. Or no, Inglorious Broadcaster, sorry. We'll get it right one of these days.
He just retired from the military.
He done did, and I hope to see him at the Comic-Con
it's
with his daughter.
It's depressing when people younger than us retire.
No, what's depressing is when one of my customers, Truett, brought his daughter, and she had been going through some health issues. And so when she got to the con, I was like, I'm so glad you're feeling better. And she looked at me like, who is this guy and why is he saying that? And I said, well, you got to remember, Dad and Mom are telling us about this. I mean, I remember when you were little and shopping at my store. She barely remembers the store. But I imagine it's a lot like having Alzheimer's. You know, everybody knows what you're doing, but nobody knows. You don't know anybody. So, but I am working hard, digging through boxes, putting more and more fun stuff up on the eBays. And, of course, if you are a listener of the show, or if you happen to be an old customer like Jamie. For Jamie, I snuck in a copy of Worldwide News. He is going to return it. He said it didn't quite meet his expectations. But the point is I will give you something from my vast accumulation of not so much crap anymore, but still a lot. And, oh, God, there's so much more. K-R-A-Y-Z, come get some.
And now we get to my favorite part of the show.
Letters. Ooh, now we're talking.
No. Freaking and geeking. Joe, what are you freaking on?
I had another fucking brake job. Another?
Is that what you kids are calling it these days?
No, I'm calling it the first one was the front of the car, and the second one was the back of the car. My poor truck. So we're talking in the last month, I have dropped another $2,000 into my truck. And it's going through the same bullshit that Corey had to go through until he got himself a new car where it's like, where do you stop? When do you decide it's too much for this? I just should go buy something new. And what makes me real nervous is not so much my truck, because I know once it's fixed, it's pretty much done. Because just like my dad said, and you know, Corey, you know, you'll start replacing the major systems, but once they're replaced, they're pretty much good for another 100,000, 200,000 miles.
Yeah.
But I don't know what's next. And then, of course, Holly's real proud of herself because she's out and she's going to buy herself her own first car.
Wow.
Am I saying it right? A Toyota Corolla?
Yeah.
And her boyfriend's, well, our friend who's a boy, we haven't quite figured that out. Here's what Dad thinks of that. But they went out and they looked at it and they came and they were trying to give me and Chris the hard sell. And we're like, hey, you know, whatever, we're good with it. You know, and me, I'm asking the helpful questions. Four wheels? We think so. Well, there should be five because one of them's a steering wheel. Go back and check.
And six because one of them should be a spare.
Yeah, they have a real spare, not those stupid donut things that were so prevalent.
My car doesn't even have a spare. I brought a brand new car. They don't sell spares in new cars anymore, Joe. So no, here's an air pump, and here's a chemical that you spray in your tire to reinflate it.
Which will be good when the thing shreds on the highway, but
right. So that's why this spring I'm going to buy a spare tire for the car. Good luck when you call people. Oh, you just want a new tire in it? No, I need rims and everything.
You got yourself a spare. Anyways, that's enough freaking for me. I'm not doing a sale on eBay because I just finished one. But again, if you see something you want and you're a listener of the show, I'll always cut you a deal. And I, like I said, I'm kind of accelerating putting things up. Because now I got my price guide, and just like I did with the Shazam run that I put up, I can actually grade it and price it fairly. So I got that going for me.
Which is nice.
Yeah. What are you freaking on, Mr. Strode?
Well, we talked about it a little earlier in the show. But there's this group of people, and I'm not going to give them any oxygen. Not going to name them. But they had a list this week that they put up on the Twitter, and they said, you are not a fan of comics and games if you're a socialist, a Marxist, a social justice warrior, a feminist, and on and on and on and on and on. And of course, the guy's name on Twitter, not biggest, it was something about the king of the, something about the misogynists. So, buddy, here to tell you now, you're never getting laid. Second thing is, here's my rule for, Joe, do you want to know what you need to do to be a fan of comics?
Buy the stuff you like, don't buy the stuff you don't like.
You need to read a comic book and like it. That's it. That's all.
Well, no, no. I mean, you got to read it first. I mean, whether you like it or not, you don't know until you read it.
Yeah, just read
it. I don't like people. Oh, I don't like the Ms. Marvel.
Did
you ever read it? I've never read it because I didn't think it was aimed at me. But when I finally Skyped the copies from the kids at the library and read it, it's a damn good comic book.
Yes, it is.
I read Ironheart when she replaced, they decided to let Tony Stark go AWOL. Read 3 issues. Did not like it. Do you know what I did, Corey?
What?
Do you think I went to the internet and I railed against everybody that even thought that this was a good idea to replace Tony Stark with a young black female inventor who created her own armor and decided to usurp the name Iron Man and take over what was once a proud tradition? No, I just stopped buying it. And I actually sold the 3 copies I had on eBay. But
and the whole thing about, well, our heroes are being replaced. You know what? Captain America's been replaced more often than I've had tacos. And I like tacos.
He loves tacos. Yeah, same thing. I mean, I listened to guys at work rail and I said, you know, I've been doing comic books for a long time. And, you know, I remember, you know, Thor being replaced by some guy named Thunderstrike. I mean, I remember Rodney being Iron Man for a while and people weren't freaking out.
Yeah, they were. But there wasn't the internet that you had to put up with it.
To amplify their bullshit. Yeah,
people
people
would actually go, oh, this story turned out okay. And then back in the early 90s, they were replacing characters right and left. And then the character would come back. And the replacement character would get their own book. And that's kind of how they tried to introduce new characters. Because if you just introduce a new character in today's marketplace, no one cares.
No. And when they even try to bring back a character that they've been sitting on for ages, people give it a collective yawn.
So it's one of the things that they do to try to get interest in new characters. But I'm not even worried about that. It's this whole gatekeeping thing. Well, you're not a real fan if you don't know blah, 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 blah. No, 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 no. Is there, when you're sitting down to watch TV, Joe, let's say you've never seen Big Bang Theory before, and you sit down and go, oh, I hear this show's pretty funny. When you turn it on, does some idiot come on and go, now, by the way, if you don't know this, 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 and this, you're not a real fan if you can't watch this.
Oh, that was a question. Oh, I'm sorry. I was on CBS.com watching Big Bang Theory, but no, it doesn't actually.
No, because I hear that there are some shops where there are, nerds who hang out and go, oh, you don't look like you've been reading blah, blah, blah character for the past 5 years, so you're not a real fan. Fuck you. We're all real fans. You know what? If somebody went and saw the Black Panther movie and that was the first time they'd ever heard of Black Panther, and then they go buy a Black Panther book, guess what? They're a real fan. Or they buy the Archie Digest, and they go, oh, these stories are cool. And they go and they go to the comic shop and pick up the new Black Panther comic. They're a real fan. I hate the whole gatekeeper thing. And comic shops used to be real bad at that, to the point where that's where comic book guy on The Simpsons came from. And I'm going to be honest with you, most those shops are dead now.
And I got to say, there are times where you and I will talk about a comic we don't care for. But it's always, we're not telling people not to try it. We're just saying, I don't like it. It's our opinion. And as we all know, opinions are like assholes. If you want the rest of that, go look it up. But
opinions are like assholes. You can't show them on primetime TV. Wait, what?
What?
Huh? But
wait, I'm pretty sure Dennis France did that. And what was that Wasn't Hill Street Blues.
No, it was an NYPD blue. No, he just showed his cheeks.
There was a blue in there somewhere.
He didn't show the brown eye, Joe. Yeah, you know, he didn't eye, open you know up the old... cheeks and go, hey, take a look at this.
Take a look at this.
You know it's in there somewhere, though.
Second thing, I've been reading Gwenpool on the Marvel Unlimited. And it started as kind of a cute idea. Oh, you know, it's a character from our world who goes to the Marvel Universe and knows all the secrets of the Marvel Universe. Well, you know, they're running about 6 months behind, and they've announced that Gwenpool has been canceled. And as I'm reading the last few issues on Marvel Unlimited, I can see why. Damn, did that book go off the rails? Now, I like the idea of metatextualism. You've got a character who knows that she's in a comic book, and they play with that a little, but it got to the point where it was just confusing because she would start ripping the page apart, but they didn't do anything with it. And then her evil version from the future came back, and they didn't do much with that. And it became complicated just to be complicated. And I wonder if the creative team said, kind of was reaching for stuff beyond their grasp, that they were trying to do something and it just didn't work. But man, the last four issues I read on Marvel Unlimited just didn't make any sense at all. It would be like, oh, here's something shocking about the fact that she's in a comic book, and then they wouldn't follow up on it, and it wouldn't have anything to do with the story. It was just, they just would do it. And I could see why. You know, and it makes me think that maybe the character was kind of a one-trick pony that, well, they should have canceled this after 12 issues or something. And then the last thing is I've not been feeling well the last couple of weeks. It's not been, you know, full-blown sick where I have to take sick days, but my stomach's been upset, my throat's been bothering me. And rather than go to the doctor, Joe, I did what every American does. I went
to the interwebs.
I went to WebMD, and I put in my symptoms into WebMD, and you know what they told me? Inoperable cancer. Pretty much anything you put into WebMD, you've got inoperable cancer, and you're going to die. I'm not going to WebMD anymore. It scares me. Maybe it's just I'm really stressed, and I've got a sore throat because I'm really busy at work, and I'm talking all the time. Joe, what are you geeking on?
TV-wise, my wife and I are watching a show called The Looming Towers. It's a miniseries on Hulu.
Yes, I've heard about it.
Kind of a drama web based on a book of the same name by Lawrence Wright. Apparently a 10-issue show. I think 6 or 7 are out. We're up into, I think, episode 3. And it traces the rising threat of Osama bin Laden and al-Qaeda in the late 1990s and shows how the rivalry between the FBI and CIA during that time may have inadvertently set the path for the tragedy of 9/11. It follows a group of squad in New York, so the CIA guys in D.C., counterterrorism divisions of the FBI, CIA. They always say it's based on an amalgamation of real people. There are, of course, some people like Richard Clark, who's National Coordination Security, blah, 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 Chief Counterterrorism Advisor. It starts in the Clinton years, and there's often times where my wife will stop and ask, you know, did that really happen? And I say, well, you know, the book The Looming Towers was nonfiction, so this is kind of a drama based off that. I haven't read the book, although I'll probably try to pick up a copy by it. I find this of interest mostly because my job is a direct result of what happened on 9/11. And so ideally we'd like to think, you know, oh yeah, it's never going to happen again, but you know, who knows? But the way things are going around here now, nobody's paying attention to history anyways. So what we need to help us out is some good old fashioned SHIELD. Corey, oh, what the hell? We'll give you the dime now. Cause you tell me, you know what SHIELD stands for.
Oh, it changed so many times. But I know.
Well, just go with the original Lee and Kirby one.
Supreme Headquarters Investigation Espionage SCHIE Law Enforcement Division.
Close enough. I don't even care because I, for the first time ever, read, oh, by the way, here's your dime, The Complete Collection Shield by Lee and Kirby. Ooh, I have never, ever
that
read
was fun stuff.
Oh, my sweet bejesus, this was the most fun I've had reading a comic in a long, long time. And this basically, it starts out with Fantastic Four 21. Now, at the time they had Sergeant Fury and the Howling Commandos. And, of course, everybody wanted to know, well, if he was alive in World War II, was he alive in current Marvel Age? And so they brought him forward as a colonel. And I don't recall if they actually called him S.H.I.E.L.D. or not. It was, the story was okay. It had the hate monger in it. You know, very much a thing of
the
time.
Fantastic Four.
Yeah, number 21, way back in 61. And what they did is they started a series of S.H.I.E.L.D. in Strange Tales, 135 through 150. And this was where I think Doctor Strange had one half of the book and S.H.I.E.L.D. had, Nick Fury had the other half of the book.
Which was one of the strangest pairings in comics.
But what was fun about this is they were at war with Hydra. And this war didn't just take place in Strange Tales. It took place in Tales of Suspense because they refer to things going on in Tales of Suspense. Anthony Stark was there. Now, they never once refer to Anthony Stark as Iron Man. They do have some spots where he's like, oh, God, I wish I had my briefcase with me. So the war probably was going on in Iron Man as well. But and this was a war. This was a fully functional S.H.I.E.L.D. department going after an equally impressive Hydra. When Hydra attacked, it wasn't just Hydra, one person. It was a ton of Hydra people. And, yeah, Nick Fury was probably on the vanguard of stopping it. But meanwhile, behind him was a fully functional S.H.I.E.L.D. using all sorts of wonderfully crazy machines and technologies and ESP devices to go against Hydra to stop them from using their things. And it even got, you know, once Hydra was defeated the first round, and Corey, let's throw out a little trivia. Who was the first leader of Hydra that we were introduced to?
Baron Strucker.
Nope, before that.
Oh! I remember Baron Strucker, so I don't know.
No, he was in charge of them.
That's right.
There was and of course now I had the page marked, and why can't I find it? Well, you know what? I will find it when you're doing your thing, because they end up destroying, or this guy ends up getting killed, and his daughter escapes. And I know his daughter.
Remember, they had a big deal. It was the end of Hydra, and then Hydra was back.
Hang on a second. I'm gonna have to Google this because I was reading this like, wait a minute, they finished Hydra? I know Hydra was back. Arnold Brown appeared in Strange Tales 135. When his wife died, he vowed he would give his daughter everything his wife lacked. He joined both powerful corporations, the Imperial Industrial Internationals, where he was actually the secretary. And he ends up dying, which brings Hydra to its knees in the first run. And his daughter, ends up, his daughter is Laura Brown, and she's Hydra's Special Agent X, and she shows up elsewhere in the Marvel Universe, but he's killed by S.H.I.E.L.D. agents. And that was the first downfall of Hydra, but Hydra came back because, as they discovered, it was Baron von Strucker running everything in the background. And that happened in book two that I read, which was S.H.I.E.L.D. by Stranenko, The Complete Collection. And this starts out where collecting Strange Tales 151 to 168, and then Nick Fury Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. 1 through 3 and 5, which ultimately means 4 was probably a reprint.
Yes.
And it's kind of a gradual thing, because first, you know, Stranenko's doing art over Kirby layouts, and then the layouts disappear, and Stranenko takes over, and he's got much more details. And then, out of nowhere, he just cuts loose, and the art goes funky and crazy. And it's sure enough, it's Strange Tales 156, where we discover that it's actually Baron Strucker, who I believe Strucker must have been introduced earlier. Was he in
Yeah, he was in the Sergeant Fury comics. He was kind of the main bad guy in the Sergeant Fury comics.
So that was quite a reveal. Now, the one thing that was weird about Straninko's run is that it changed more from the incredible thing. Like, I always got this feeling when I was reading Lee and Kirby's run that it was an entire organization of S.H.I.E.L.D. was moving against Hydra. But when I got in the Straninko run, it changed because I think this was more the influence of James Bond. It became more like, okay, yeah, S.H.I.E.L.D.'s out there, but they're waiting until Fury discovers something. You never get the feeling of the kinetic energy that Lee and Kirby had, and there's no way you could. But Straninko developed his own crazy style where, you know, Fury, he'd have been better off not the agent, the director of S.H.I.E.L.D., but just he's the agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. because his one-man stuff, and he just goes through such incredible tortures, and he always comes out on top. There's a number of awesome scenes, you know, because we get introduced to I can't think of her full name, Valerie.
Yeah.
And at the end of the book, they show some of the original artwork. They did a crazy double page spread that was a quadruple page spread. You need to buy two copies of Strange Tales 167 in order to see the run
side by side.
And they do that at the end of the complete collection. And of course, who's that guy who's the S.H.I.E.L.D. agent who's smiling nonstop?
Sitwell.
He replaced. I thought Sitwell was the guy who know it all.
Oh, okay. I would have to reread it. It's been a while.
Oh man, because they were great. There was one agent who constantly was, you know, complimenting Fury and Dum Dum to the point where Fury's like, just hold your horses, kid. You know, why can't I think of the guy's name? And then this guy shows up and he's smiling like crazy. And that's every time you see him, he's coming up out of the ground shooting gun. He's smiling, you know. And then there's something I got to do here. They discover that one of the things that was manipulating the Yellow Claw, because they brought the Yellow Claw in. And now this was before before Hands of Kung Fu.
Yeah.
Shang-Chi. And I don't know if, I don't know because a lot of these I never read, but Yellow Claw's disposed of, but not really, because we find out it's Doom and something called the Prime Mover playing chess. And I'm curious if the Prime Mover was ever seen again, or if it was just a...
Well, let me look, because I remember that, too. It was like, oh, there's our big reveal, and then Straninko didn't do anymore. So, Prime Mover, Marvel.
Prime Mover later abandoned Doom, traveled into space, was countered and challenged by Game Master to a game using Korvac against the Grandmaster's Pawns, Defenders, and Daredevils. And this was in Giant Size Defenders 3. So he does show up, and they do show. I guess I'm ruining something, but I guess they Doom and Prime Mover force Shang-Chi to. But they don't say what volume that is. So they apparently will have a game too, and he played a game against the Christoph Vernard version of Doom, and did something against Prime Fantastic Four and Namor, but they don't have any volume or issues needed. So it does show up again. So. Two wildly different versions of S.H.I.E.L.D., and of the two, I really loved the Lee Kirby one. I mean, and the problem is we're never going to see that again because it was Lee and Kirby. There's no way they're going to do that again. Another book I read to change topics is American Gods, the graphic novel from Dark Horse by Neil Gaiman, Pete Craig Russell, Scott Hamilton, with artwork by Mac Fabry, David Keenan, Colleen Dorn, Walt Simonson. I absolutely love the book. I have yet to see the TV show, but the graphic novel is amazing. I bought the hardcover because this is just the first part of the story. I don't know how many hardcovers there will be. The second comic series is out right now through Dark Horse, but this, you know, I got the same feeling reading this that I did when I read the book. You know, and I even forgot some of it because I'm reading this like, well, isn't this one this is supposed to do? And you know it's got to be good book when you know, I just read the book less than 6 months ago and I'm reading the graphic novel. I still don't remember what's going to happen next, even though I've read it a dozen times. So I definitely recommend, if you haven't read either the book or picked up, I read the book first and then go see the graphic novel. And eventually I'm going to see the show, so I'll talk about that as well. The last thing I'll talk about is I picked up a while back Best Seat in the House by Justin Roberts, who was an announcer, ring announcer for WWE. And this is not published through WWE.
Oh, no.
It's his own book. He's not doing a tell-all book, but he doesn't pull any punches. And he basically comes, you know, as you're reading this, you realize that WWE is basically an ego-run company. The guys in power are always busy trying to shove the people out. Justin brings into the idea that there was a what was the name of the young kid who had cancer that ended up?
I know.
Connor. Yeah, and they have a big award for him, and they gave him the first WWE Hall of Famer award. Well, apparently, initial contact for this guy was made through Justin Roberts, and he brought Stephanie McMahon in, and eventually, you know, when they announced what was going on, they basically cut Justin Roberts out of the story altogether.
Yes.
Which we've seen WWE do before. They did that with Ultimate Warrior. They cut him out. They've cut Hulk Hogan out of everything. And it's real interesting for a company that's, publicly owned, the bullying that's going on, the strangest. And, you know, if you're a fan of wrestling, none of this is really a surprise to you, because there's been dozens of times, the guys on PW Insider will be the first to tell you, you know, somebody gets some heat, like Zack Ryder or Daniel Bryan's, who I guess has just been cleared to go back to the ring.
Yes, today. Thanks for stealing one of my geekings.
Hey, you know, and I saw that. I was going to take it. But, you know, they always try, the powers that be always try to saddle somebody with a bad gimmick. I mean, look at Dusty Rhodes when he was the American Dream and put him in polka dot, and he made it work. There are certain guys who they get heat behind them. They get people cheering for them. But because it's not what they want, they get buried or they get released, or creative has nothing for you. If you really want to know what it's like working for WWE, this is the book you want to pick up, because he will tell you what it's like. And Justin Roberts is not bitter towards WWE. I mean, he thanks Vince McMahon for giving him his chance. Justin was one of the few guys, all he ever wanted to do was be a WWE ring announcer. And you just stop and you think of, if they had actually utilized his talent, how much more valuable would the company be? But, you know, then again, when you control everything and you have all the controlling stock, you can pretty much do what you want. Mark Zuckerberg, looking at you. So, but again, an interesting book, a definite read through for anybody who loves wrestling, or if you're even thinking, you know, hey, I want to go get a job at WWE. And for me, the answer would be no. But no, I don't think so. I think that's it. I had a huge stack of books, and I pretty much plowed right through them. I didn't even get a chance to talk about Marvel Comic Digest number 5. But I think you might. Avengers featuring Black Panther. Corey, what you geeking on?
First thing I'm geeking on is what Joe mentioned. Wrestling's actually been very interesting the last couple of weeks. New Japan is coming to the U.S., and they're going to be having the shows live on Access TV. I actually was on my Sirius satellite radio. They were interviewing Jushin Thunder Liger, who doesn't speak any English. So the interview was Bully Ray, or the host of the show, would be asking a question, and it would get translated, and Juice and Thunder Liger would give his answer in Japanese, and then the translator would say what he said. And I have to admit that after about 10 minutes, it's like, yeah, I can't listen to this anymore, because it's, you know, Japanese for 7 minutes out of the 10. And then last night on Raw, we had Ultimate Deletion. And if you've ever watched any of the Matt Hardy, the Broken or Woken Matt Hardy stuff, you know what you're in for. And I imagine a lot of WWE fans who had never seen it before were watching it just going, what the fuck is this? Kind of like we did with the first, I forget what the first one was called, but the first delete bit between Matt and Jeff Hardy.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just, it's so fun and so strange and so wonderful that I just could, I was so happy. I was so happy watching it. And then today, they announced that Daniel Bryan is able to return to the ring. I have seen Bryan Danielson wrestle forever. I still remember taking a date to see him versus Samoa Joe at the Ring of Honor show over at the St. Paul Armory. And they went over an hour. It was crazy. He loves being in the ring. And if you followed his story, you saw that he actually had severe depression after he was forced to retire, because his whole life has been around wrestling. And, you know, at 34, I think it was, he's told, nope, you're done. You can't wrestle ever again. And he had no idea what to do with himself. He didn't know who he was anymore. And now he's back in the ring. One thing I hope that he doesn't go on the road and wrestle every night. Because just because they say that you don't have, you know, the horrible injuries that they thought he did, still toward the end he was having seizures, he was having memory problems. So, you know, just kind of be like Triple H or, you know, The Undertaker, those guys who, when you wrestle, it's a special event, not every week. And we're gearing up for WrestleMania, which is, they've already said that the Mania show itself is going to be 5 hours, and the pre-show is going to be 2 hours, and I'm like, oh God, that means it's going to be 10 hours altogether. I may have to lay down during the show. Comic-wise, I've really been getting into catching up on my Image books, because Image creators are able to do this long-form storytelling. I talked last week about the book Revival. I'm about halfway through that, and I started reading Motor Crush, which is by the creative team who did the Batgirl story that we reviewed a while back. It's Fletcher Stewart and Babs Tarr. And Babs Tarr's art is so good. It's so good. It's a science fiction story set around motorcycle racing. And all I can tell you is, if you would have told me a few years ago that I would love a comic set in the future around motorcycle racing, I kind of would have just shook my head. It's not a subject I am at all interested in, but these characters make it very, these comic creators make it very interesting. And I love the fact that Image is giving creators this platform to, hey, tell a story, long form, like Chew. You know, it lasted almost 70 issues. And when they started out, they were like, we have a story with a beginning, middle, and end, and we're going to do the whole thing. It's kind of like what Vertigo used to do. And as I'm reading these long form stories that they're doing at Image, a lot of me thinks, oh, this 20 years ago, this would have been at Vertigo. But Vertigo's gone away for the most part, and Image gives a much better deal than Vertigo does. So I'm going to be reading a lot of that stuff, because especially it's coming up on Comicology is dirt cheap. I got caught up on Spider-Gwen. Joe, have you ever read Spider-Gwen?
I read a couple issues because I picked up a few of the variant covers. I think it'd be better in book form.
What it is, it's set in an alternate universe, Earth 65, by the way, where Peter Parker did not
69 himself.
Peter Parker did not get the powers of Spider-Man. Gwen Stacy did. And
he's dead, Jim.
Yep, and Peter Parker's the one who died instead of Uncle Ben.
So you can have all the rice you want.
And first off, the visual design of Spider-Gwen is great. All the original sketches that I've gotten over the past 3-4 years have all been of the character, because I think the character design itself is very, very cool and very visual. But the stories are a good mix of teenage angst and superheroes. I like the fact that in this alternate world, things are a little different. Characters who you would think would be heroes are not. And it also deals with the fact that, hey, she's Captain Stacy's daughter doing the stuff that Spider-Man did. What is it like trying to hide that? You know, what's it like trying to hide the fact that you're a vigilante from your dad? And I also like the fact that Gwen and Mary Jane have created a band. So you have a reason for Mary Jane Watson to be in the book before she ever would have met Gwen, because they didn't meet till college in the real Marvel Universe. But it's not your typical superhero book. It's I think both Marvel and DC are running into trouble by having way too many alternate universe books. But this one I like, and there's really no way they could put the character in the regular Marvel Universe. But it's, again, it's a book that I like. It's not your typical Marvel book, and it's another book that a lot of fans would go, eh, it's a girl. Ugh. And then the last thing that I am geeking on is, boy, DC is really upping their paperback and omnibus and hardcover game. One of the things that we talked about was when, right around Flashpoint and 52, DC kind of, they quit doing the omnibuses. I'm sorry, they quit doing the archives. They quit doing the showcases. They pretty much gave up on a lot of the reprinting their older stuff. But they've kind of come back in a vengeance. Joe's talked about the Batman Golden Age hardcovers, omnibuses.
Bye.
And they're doing it for Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman, even though, man, those Wonder Woman stories from the 40s are terrible. But I like how they are reprinting a lot of the stuff from the Silver Age, such as the Doom Patrol is getting trade paperbacks. The original Justice League is getting trade paperbacks. The newer stuff is being put into good formats, but they're also putting out stuff like Walt Simonson's Orion. Here you go. We're going to be putting that out in books. The John Byrne Wonder Woman, which Joe really likes, they're putting that out as books. The omnibuses, they're really upping their game with, okay, here's Doom Patrol, here's Brave and the Bold, here's Final Crisis, here's Infinite Crisis. And even some of the New 52 stuff that went over well, like Red Hood and the Outlaws, is being put out as an omnibus. I was not a fan, but there were people who really liked it. So it's cool that they're doing that. They're putting out a new version of Ronin, which will have a lot of promotional art and fold-out pages and special features and, you know, more of the behind-the-scenes stuff, which was only in the Absolute version before. DC is really kicking up their collected game, and I think it's because somebody kind of tapped him on the shoulder and said, you know, back in the 90s when we were selling at number two, you know how we made more money than Marvel? With our collected editions. If you want to keep your job, you might want to do that now. Meanwhile, Marvel is going back and they're reprinting some of their omnibuses that have been out of print for a long time. Like Tomb of Dracula omnibus is being reprinted. Joe, let's take a look at what the first print of the Tomb of Dracula.
All right, let me power up. Let's see how you spell tomb. Survey says. Let's see. I see one for 200. Let's go to. It's one of my. There's only 12 on the eBays. Somebody actually.
On Amazon, the cheapest one is $482.48.
Which volume?
Volume 1. Volume 2 is much cheaper. But volume 1, $482.48. And Marvel's reprinting that. So I think Marvel's going back and they're going to. Because they're reprinting the Fantastic Four Volume 1. The one I'm interested in seeing what the price is.
How much was that?
For the first Tomb of Dracula, $482.
Well, right now, somebody just listed all three of them for $400. So, folks, check around.
Yeah. Let's see. The Eternals Omnibus is on Amazon at $689.71.
Eternals, huh? Yeah, and I remember, I think I sold mine for $300.
Yeah. So, and that came out in 2006. So that was 12 years ago. Hopefully Marvel's going to kind of go, well, let's reprint that stuff. It's making money.
Yeah, it's still listing for $500. $400. Somebody's got one for $400. Buy it now. And when I put mine on, there were people listing it for like $1,500.
Yeah.
But there is still somebody right below there. $1,500. Don't you believe it.
But I'm really happy about the stuff that DC's putting out as straight paperbacks and hardcovers. Marvel even is, they're dipping into their archives for some of this stuff, because stuff that I thought would never get reprinted is being reprinted. However, with the new Ant-Man movie, there's one series I'd love it if they reprinted, because they've only reprinted the first issue of this, and they've reprinted it a whole bunch of times. Marvel Feature did a run of Ant-Man in the 70s.
Yeah, I remember that. Never read it.
Not only have I not ever read it, I can't find it. I have dug through bins looking for those issues. Nope, nobody bought them then. Nobody's got them now. I think by the 70s, people went, Ant-Man? He's fucking Ant-Man. Who cares? Well, we all care now because there's a movie. Believe it or not, kids, you've listened to Joe blather on about comics for an hour and a half, and I probably talk for about 15 minutes, which is my favorite kind of show.
Yeah.
And as we say every week, the comic we like the least, we still like better than the comic that you like the most. Joe?
Let's see. When you think about how huge the Earth is, and how it's just a fraction of the size of the sun, which is just a speck of dust in the overall universe, it's easy to rationalize eating an entire pie. Corey, hit my music.
Kid, there's a million toys at Toys R Us that I could play with, from bikes and trains to video games. It was the biggest toy store there is. I don't wanna grow up, because if